had unnerved his guests, and rightly so. Kurd stopped and beheld the short swords, daggers, maces, and spiked bucklers that gleamed in the torchlight, spread over the wall to maximum effect. The decorated face cages and helms stared back, their surfaces polished, but still dented and scratched from blows that Kurd remembered as if they had happened yesterday. He was proud of his collection, and his one known weakness was prattling on at length about each weapon and each story that came with it. Kurd remembered every fight he'd ever bled in and the weapons he'd used at the time. He studied his old but still serviceable tools of the trade before finally reaching up and wrapping his fingers around the grip of one. The mace came down from its perch with a rasp of metal on metal. The shaft stretched as long as a man's arm, while the head was nothing more than a heavy block of wrought iron with ruts covering its surface. Kurd looked at another mace, one with spikes covering a head the size of a small child's, but there was a menace about that solid wrecking block of iron with the ruts. Many a time he'd heard men talk about it in fear, as if Kurd were about to stamp his mark upon their flesh in the same manner a face might be pressed into gold or some other soft metal. It was easy to cut or stab, but Kurd found he greatly enjoyed smashing things with the weapon. There was no greater feeling than splitting flesh from the sheer force of impact, not from edge or point, but simply from power. He knew no better rush than feeling bones snap with one heavy blow, seeing the blackening of a man's bare skin and muscle as the mace tenderized it with every dense kiss. He hefted the weapon with his good arm, appreciating its weight and studying its face. "Come with me," he commanded Bazanj. He left the room with mace in hand, and the female servant following. He didn't look to see if that composed little bastard was on his heels. Bazanj would be. Kurd had to get rid of the energy building in him, and he couldn't think of a better way than hitting something. He descended to the ground floor and made his way to the empty training area. Racks of wooden and metal swords all waited, greeted him, as did the heavy timbers the men tossed around as part of their strength and conditioning training. At one end were the long upright logs, each as tall as a man. Their trunks were chipped, splintered and battered from countless strikes. It was a goal and honor to be the gladiator who finally toppled the wooden practice marks. In his life, Kurd had chopped down 5 from repeated blows with swords and axes. Kurd walked to one heavy timber, feeling the sand get into the spaces between his toes. The log was a new one, replaced after the day's exercises. He leaned the mace against it and ran his hand over the wood's rough skin, keeping it there for a moment. Kurd rubbed his forehead with the stump of his left arm and stepped away from the practice target. He picked up the mace, not choking it, and let the weapon's weight pull it towards the ground until Kurd caught it at the end of its leather-bound shaft. Lifting the mace with his right hand, he waved it at the target and looked about until he found Bazanj. "Have you ever used one of these?" Kurd asked.
"No, my lord."
With his one arm, Kurd whipped the mace into the base of the wooden pillar, the connection ringing out. Wood chips scattered to the sands. Dark Kurd bared teeth and brought the mace to his shoulder. He let it rest there for a moment, then whipped it once more into the target. The sound made Bazanj involuntarily jump. The woman stood off to one side, no doubt hoping that the partial darkness cloaked her from her master's attention. Kurd struck again and again in a merciless rhythm. Particles of bark and fibers sprang from the wood and sprinkled the ground. Though in his 60s, and using one arm, Kurd channeled the angst he was feeling into each swing, meaning to topple the log this very night. The mace left a white spot where the bark had been smashed away. The old warrior swung repeatedly until his sweat beaded and fell, and the strokes began losing their power. He didn't care if he woke up his fighters. He didn't care if he woke up the dead and gone. He just needed to hit something, and it was best no one interrupted him. And no one did. In time, Kurd stopped swinging and stood back from the pounded spot on the midsection of the timber. Wilting fibers hung off the point of impact. Kurd lazily swung the weapon through the night air for a moment. His shoulder ached from the exertion, but but it was a comfortable ache and not something serious. He glanced at Bazenge. The little man stood at attention, and Courage had to hand it to him. He didn't seem uneasy at all with the display.
"Are you listening?" Courage asked.
Bazenge swallowed then, and that one motion sent a stab of satisfaction through Courage's heart.
"I am, my lord. Keep an eye on that punce, Jiberian. Let it be known that the House of Courage has unfinished business with him, when he's ready."
"And if he flees from the city?"
That quieted Courage. It was a good question. He looked back to the post and hefted his mace.
"Seddon help him, if he does."
He swung with all of his remaining might. Chapter 3 When morning found Pignot, he was in bed, tangled under a pile of expensive limbs and cheap blankets. With a sniff, he stared at the white arms holding him down before taking in the high, bare plank ceiling and the thick beams supporting it. His insides felt ravaged, and a deep, deep thirst seized his attention. He wanted water this morning, and he studied the arms and legs on top of him for a moment, searching for the best way out of the fleshy puzzle. The women he'd slept with the night before did not move as he extracted himself. One moaned in protest before burying her dark head in a pillow. Pignot got both arms free and sat up. A mistake, as he felt the room whirl. Cold sweat broke out on his face and skin, and he knew if he saw his own face, he'd probably find that he looked like something shat out of a dead man's hole. Worse, he had to fight this day, and he didn't know what time it was. Sounds of activity from a closed, shuttered window reached him, and he figured it was late in the morning. Feeling his stomach sink all the more, he struggled to get his legs free from his two darlings, both of whom were naked underneath the blankets. It took a few moments longer than he wanted, but he untangled himself from the ladies. He got to his feet and shook his head at the sight of both of them on the bed, their bare, ripe asses pointed at the ceiling. He was a fool to leave that. The clothes he'd worn the night before were scattered around the room as if a windstorm had ripped them from his person, and it took a while, time interspersed with moments of physical weakness, to pick them up. Getting into his pants, shirt, and boots required more effort and focus, and he almost fell getting out the door. A thick wooden rail stopped him from going over the edge of the second floor, and he stopped there, feeling sick from the height. Before him, the alehouse's main floor stretched out, lit by wide beams of sunlight from open windows. A barkeep moved about, humming as he cleaned up the garbage and vomit from the night before. Pignot's frame shuddered at the smell of spilt wine and ale, and he opened his mouth for a settling breath of fresh air. There was no such thing in the place, however, and what he took over his tongue, what he tasted, was the foulness of the night before.
"But the windows are open."
He blinked in confusion and held on to the railing for dear life as he eased himself down the stairs. Each step shook him just enough to give him pause, for fear of voiding right there.
"You all right?"
a gruff voice asked. Pignot felt the sweat drip from his face as he regarded the mopping barkeep.
"No. Don't heave up in here. Do it outside."
"Fine."
Grunting, the barkeep moved away, continuing to clean.
"Any water about?" Pignot asked. "The pitcher on the counter, if you like."
"How much?"
"Coin, you mean?"
"Aye, that."
"Drink what you like. I'll not charge a man thirsty for water."
Thank Seddon. That motivated him down the last few steps and to the bar. He picked up the brass pitcher, took a quick peek to make sure it actually contained water, and then downed the liquid in large gulps. He felt life come back into his body, and when he placed the pitcher back on the counter, it was almost empty. Pignot palm-wiped his face and gazed about the cave that was the alehouse, feeling himself shiver. He looked towards the alcove where his boys, as he now thought of them, were, and saw that they were scattered over the table and long chairs as if slaughtered to a man. Every step he took towards the alcove warned him not to move too fast or sudden. Then his bladder suddenly awoke and demanded attention. Sighing, Pignot hurried to the adjoining latrine and unsheathed his manhood, just as he thought he wasn't going to make it. The foul smells from the small open room disgusted him and almost tipped his stomach. Emptying his bladder weakened him, and he leaned heavily against a wall, something he would never do in the right frame of mind. That movement made him miss the trough with his stream, and he pissed everywhere before he realized what had happened. Groaning in sick frustration, Pignot got himself back under control and finished. He banged through the doorways back into the alehouse and staggered to a stop at the alcove's edge, ignoring the hard looks from the barkeep. Mullock snored while sitting upright, a woman face down in his lap. Gaul was nowhere to be seen, but the cripple couldn't have gotten far. Harm was on the opposite seat, stretched out as though it were a narrow bed. His bare gut, pressed up against the edge of the table, was the only thing keeping him in place. The man's face was pointed at the ceiling, and his mouth was open to allow a view of his terrible teeth. Light snores ripped the air, which seemed fresher down here.
"Hey,"
Pignot called weakly.
"Wake up."
No one heard.
"Hey!"
Pignot reached out and tousled the Jiberian's short hair, not liking the greasy touch of it at all.
"Wake up!"
He wiped his fingers on his leg. One of Harm's eyes cracked open, rolled around sleepily, and focused on Pignot. He smacked his lips once before the eyelid closed, and he fell back to sleep.
"Wake up, you git!"
Pignot slapped the top of the man's skull. Harm lurched and peered once more at the sunjun standing over him.
"I have to go. I have to..."
The strength almost left his legs then as a new wave of nausea overtook him. Another sheen of cold sweat glazed his face, and he leaned against the alcove's corner, thankful for it.
"Go,"
Harm suggested softly.
"Yes, go. I have to fight this day."
"You?"
The Jiberian blinked in confusion.
"You can't fight like that. You'll piss yourself first, then you'll piss on the one you're fighting."
Pignot chuckled.
"We'll both be fortunate, if it's only piss."
Harm struggled to get into a sitting position, casting concerned looks at both Pignot and the toppled fortress of empty pitchers littering the table. Mullock and his companion didn't interest him, but he regarded Pignot from head to toe.
"Dying, sudden. Have you looked at yourself? I've seen cow kisses in finer shape."
Pignot didn't need this.
"Are you coming?"
"With you?"
Harm balked and winced as if in pain.
"You're joking. Look at me. I'll be lucky to get to a piss trough. Doubly lucky to get to a shite pot. And if I do, I doubt if I'll make it back."
Across from them both, Mullock snorked, a loud, startling snore that almost brought him back to consciousness. His head rolled to one side, and he started a slow slide, stopping gently on the motionless woman in his lap. Harm directed his attention back to Pignot.
"You can't fight this day. You'll be killed."
"I have to, but I'll be heaved out of the tournament."
"What do you think you'll do on the sands? You won't have that corner to hold you up."
Pignot scowled and moved away from the wooden arch, standing on his own power and trying to project an air of defiance. He felt very close to dropping to his knees, however, and just letting his bowels run empty in one spine, shivering gush.
"I'm going."
He turned to leave.
"Wait!"
But Pignot was already moving for the door, ignoring the Jiberian's pleas for sense. Pignot couldn't afford to miss his fight. He needed to win. He needed the coin. The money would help him pay back what he already owed and keep him in food, drink, and women until the next fight. If he didn't make it to the pit, life would be worse than what it currently was. That thought didn't give him any extra strength, however, and when he entered the brightness of the streets and the streams of people, the light and bodies struck him as solidly as any mauled tap to the head. The nearby wall of the alehouse caught and supported him for the moment it took to compose himself. The sun overhead was almost at its apex, and that caused another cold bolt to surge through his frame. Pignot set his jaw. He was going to make it to the pit. Travelling the city and entering the arena's gate was a torturous blur. Bodies bumped against him, and once he even shoved back. As big as he was, Pignot was a handful even when he was as sick as a dog. He pissed often, never near a latrine. Somehow he managed to sign in with the media and later find the Pitt's armory and its quartermaster. He selected a leather cuirass that was tight enough to make him see stars and squeeze more cold sweat out of him. Then he took a helm that seemed to grip his brain with a sensation he couldn't decide was cold or hot. The first sword that he chose felt too heavy, and the second one wasn't much better. Pignot finally decided on a blade so thin, the quartermaster cocked an eyebrow in mild amusement. One sick glare from the pit fighter wiped the look off the man's face. Then, somehow, he was in the white tunnel, and everything caught up to him. Pignot leaned against the tunnel wall, guts churning. Whatever was in his stomach wanted out, and he had to push his visor up over his forehead before it all came up for real. A moment later, it did, heaving up his throat and out of his wide-open mouth in a soupy torrent of a roar. Pignot squeezed his eyes shut as he voided, seized by a terrible, shaking energy he only wished he could use in the upcoming fight. Madness. It was madness to be doing this in his condition. He remembered Harm's expression of disbelief. At the time, Pignot had laughed it off. At the time, he'd still been drunk. His stomach had soured with the intake of water. He remembered pissing, each time the stream hot and gushing, until the sourness had become rotten and threatened him with worse consequences. Pignot moaned and placed a hand over his mouth, wiping off dark drops and screwing up his face upon realizing what he'd done. He straightened and stepped back from the wide pool, fresh from his guts. The sight of it almost made him vomit again. He lurched and moaned once more, caught himself, and took perhaps the deepest breath ever. That almost helped. He squeezed his eyes shut, but the darkness spun so sharply he could have sworn it had him by the ankles, so he opened them back up. There, not 10 strides from him, stood the gatekeeper. A hardwood bench stood across from the old man, and its worn surface struck Pignot as being incredibly comfortable. "You done?" the gatekeeper asked without sympathy, and placed a hand on the lever that would open the portcullis. Steps lay beyond the man, wide and leading up to the arena where another man lingered, his body crossed in the portcullis shadows. Pignot knew he waited for the signal from the orator outside, which he would in turn relay to the gatekeeper below, who would raise the gates. Pignot focused on the steps and felt his stomach growl a question. The steps alone would make him piss himself. Sedden above. He was going to die on those damned cuts of stone. Pignot gazed imploringly at the white ceiling of the tunnel and took another gulping breath, as if it would float him above the tide of nausea coursing through his body. It was an immediate mistake. His stomach rebelled once again, and he found himself suppressing juice, which persisted until he could resist no more, and the flow burst from his lips, spattering down his front. Once finished, Pignot drew a forearm across his face and regarded the old topper with his hand still on the lever. The gatekeeper wasn't a helpful sort at all. His expression asked, "Well?" as if the fight might not happen at all. That thought had merit. Pignot couldn't remember if a match had ever been cancelled. He bent over and drew in air, which seemed to help a little.
"Not sure. I can go out there," he admitted.
The gatekeeper scowled and motioned with 2 fingers. That made Pignot look back the way he'd come. Fright seized him. Scars, Sunja's keepers of the peace, guardians of the populace, and all-around killers, were leaving their spots along the white tunnel and closing in. Pignot couldn't remember seeing them there, nor was he exactly certain what they were going to do. But at least 8 of them were coming towards him, and 8 of them might as well have been an army. Their mail vests gleamed mystically in the glare of the tunnel, but they didn't draw their short swords. Yet.
"I'm fine."
Pignot raised his hands.
"I'm fine. Really. See?
His stomach bent him over, and he had to make a conscious effort not to soil himself. Hands found him. They slammed Pignot against the wall. A knife was placed to his throat, and one pair of angry eyes sized him up. More hands moved over him. They clamped his visor down over his face. His shield got fixed to his arm. Someone pulled the sword from his scabbard and slapped it into his hand, wrapping his fingers around it and squeezing until Pignot held it with his own strength. He doubted if he could swing the thing. But he wasn't about to say anything to the scars.
"Ready?"
the gatekeeper asked without remorse. The old bastard sounded anxious to be rid of him.
"Aye, that,"
Pignot rumbled. An instant later, the scars stepped back from him, but they didn't go far. He realized some of them had tracked through the vomit on the floor. Not that he would point that out to them. Scars were dangerous, not to mention humorless.
"May Seddon take pity on you."
The gatekeeper yanked down on the lever. A rumbling sounded from above. Pignot's eyes rolled in their sockets, and his head thrummed. He did not want to go out there. Two scars noticed his hesitation and went for their swords. Pignot got moving, realizing why there weren't any cancelled fights.
"Bastard scars."
When he reached the steps, he relied on momentum and the nearby wall to keep him moving upward. He paused at the halfway point, feeling the sun's heat. His stomach curled up like a snake nailed into the dirt and left thrashing. He caught a pungent whiff of his own stomach juice coating the front of his armor. The scars had moved up to the base of the steps, barring any retreat, and appearing more than willing to cut him up if he didn't go through the open entryway at the top of the stairs. Pignot tipped his helmet towards them and regretted even that little movement. He shuffled forward, feeling the uncontained wall of sound that battered his senses, feeling it grow as he neared the opening. The voices of thousands were out there, drawing him into that hateful, hot sunlight, twisting his guts like a sailor's wet, dripping knot. The sheer volume of noise almost dropped him right there on the threshold as he stepped out into the light. He swooned, feeling the might of the sun on his helmet and having an image of his very brain stewing inside his skull. The heat and noise of the midday punished him like a god's hammer to his body. Once more, he thought about turning around, but the portcullis dropped behind him. Across the way, a monster of a man came into view, making Pignot wince in hungover exasperation. It was bad enough that he was unfit to fight, but looking at his brutish opponent made him feel like dying on the spot. The man wore heavy armor, with spikes decorating the shoulders. A grinning, jawless skull was somehow tacked to the visor, which did nothing for Pignot's confidence, nor did the hell pup's long-shafted mace and wide shield. The orator's voice rose above the crowds, calling for silence and introducing them both. Pignot caught the name Darcival, and thought it sounded as if it might belong to a daisy. Then the orator stopped speaking, and the noise of the crowd intensified.
"Lords above," Pignot thought with cold clarity, "I'm going to die this day." "Is this to the death?"
Pignot croaked, burning precious energy just to do that. The gladiator across from him, Darcival, didn't show any sign of having heard.
"Wonderful."
Pignot shook his head. He didn't have the strength to repeat himself. Darcival shrugged his big shoulders and made no move to raise his mace or shield, keeping them both at his sides. Pignot couldn't see the brute's face, but he still had the mind to sense all was not well. The sun beat down on them, and Pignot got a whiff of his own skin cooking in the heat.
"Is this," Pignot shouted to be heard over the crowd, "to the death?"
No answer, but the monster moved towards him. Darcival came on in a slow, almost off-balance stagger, as if all wasn't well with him either. He was as tall as Pignot, and perhaps even a few fingers taller with the helmet. The black eyes of the jawless skull fixed on him, then the stands, then back to him, and so on. He came onward, and the ripe stench of sweet sweat perfumed with the overpowering odor of a man who had drunk himself silly some time before made Pignot blink with realization. Darcival was drunk. Even better, Darcival appeared insanely drunk.
and this wasted form of meat and metal lurched towards Pignot, bringing his mace up to his shoulder and his shield to guard. It wasn't uncommon for free trained fighters, as Darcevo clearly was, to combat their nerves by drinking something before their matches. Pignot never did it for any of his fights, though he was guilty of it the night before at times. Such was the risk when a person came to see a free-trained battle. The houses and schools would string a man by his cog and bells if he did such a thing, but the free-trained had no such worries. A part of Pignot swore upon having drawn Darcevo this day, as fighting a drunkard wasn't anyone's idea of a good time. It was just bad form. Anything was possible in a free-trained match. Sputtering inarticulate sounds Pignot didn't understand, Darcevo grunted as he closed with the sunjun and swung for his head. Despite being hungover, Pignot's reflexes got him out of the way of the mace's arc. Darcevo staggered to his right, carried in that direction by the momentum of the swing, and came close to falling. But at the last moment, he stomped both feet into the sand and firmed up. Pignot regarded the man over the edge of his own shield, his arms suddenly finding the energy to maintain a guard. Darcevo turned and actually started, as if surprised Pignot was still standing.
"That's right, you drunk bastard.
Darcevo came at him with a roar, made metallic by his bony visor. Pignot dodged one swipe of the mace, then another. He ducked and moved around the man's shield, hearing another grunt as Darcevo swung once more and missed. Pignot circled to his foe's shield arm, and the movement made him dizzy. He stabbed with his sword and missed, attempting wildly to regain his own balance before his opponent. Darcevo got his bearings first, however, and charged in, swinging and missing badly. Pignot's equally clumsy counter-strikes and graceless dodging were just as sad. He swung at the man's head and rang his sword off Darcevo's helm with a gong, causing the brute to shriek and then moan like a boy. For long moments, the two men attacked each other in poorly executed attempts. They waved their weapons before each other's faces, coming nowhere close to making contact, before staggering away as if engaged in an awkward dance. Pignot lunged, missed, and skidded face first in the sand. Darcevo tried to smash his head in, but lost grip of his mace and sent it flying 20 paces behind him. He drew the rage of crowds when he turned about unsteadily and walked over to pick it up, allowing Pignot time to get to his feet. Pignot allowed him and took the time to just sit on the sand, basking in the growing insults and taunts. The sunjun didn't blame them. He'd do the same. From his place on the arena wall, high above the combat, the orator looked at the audience watching the battle and shook his head in barely concealed contempt. The people, incredulous at the display of arms, jeered at the fighters, spiking the hot air with insults.
"What shite goody is this? Fight, he bitches, fight!
Unfit!
How did the chamber allow you two tits unto the sand?"
And on and on. Pignot's mental anguish now matched his physical state. Darcevo walked back towards his foe, perhaps having had enough of being goaded or having sobered enough to do something. Pignot stood up, heartbeats, before his opponent lashed out with the mace and cracked it off his shield, driving him backwards. The heavily armored fighter whipped his mace into the sunjun's shield once more, ringing it like a dinner bell and numbing Pignot's arm. He retreated, wanting a breath of air, but Darcevo came forward, snapping his mace out and making Pignot duck. The crowd cheered the attacker on, quite happy that one of them had finally taken the initiative. Darcevo stepped up his pace, swinging at every part of Pignot within reach, an arm, the head, a shoulder, a knee. The sunjun deflected strike after strike with his shield, steadily retreating, and not daring to look to see where the arena wall might be. Drunk as he was, Darcevo was strong, and each blow had the full might of his arm behind it. Pignot's shield, a wooden barrier ringed with a thin band of iron, abruptly split down the middle. He felt his guts go cold as the iron head of the mace punched through the wood just above his forearm in a burst of splinters. Darcevo stepped into him and smashed his shield into Pignot's weapon arm, pinning it, pushing him back and creating room for another swing. The mace flew at Pignot's helm and clipped his metal cheek, spinning him around. He stumbled and fell in a spray of sand. Darcebo slammed his mace down, missing the Sunjan's weapon arm by a finger. Pignot drove his feet into the sand, pushing himself away, but Darcebo matched him and swung his weapon. The mace barely missed Pignot's head. The Sunjan kicked out and struck the greave, protecting his opponent's left leg. Again and again Darcebo rained down punishing blows with his mace. Pignot rolled away, avoiding each attack by hair widths, horrified as his shield fell away from his arm in a crumpled wreck of splinters and shards. Then Darcebo backed up. He staggered, his arms hanging at his sides as if completely spent. Metallic coughs and hawking issued from the skull helmet, and for a moment, Pignot realized just how quiet it had become in the pit. The big man straightened, and then stumbled forward, as if uncertain as to how to proceed. Then he stunned the crowd completely when he retreated two more shuffling steps and fell on his arse in the sand. Pignot couldn't believe his luck. He got up, hearing the growing chorus of insults and disbelief from the audience. Some screamed at Darcebo to haul his carcass to his feet, and Pignot thought those men had placed wagers on the pit fighter. Darcebo moved slowly, however, the skull visor studying the sand about him as if suddenly curious about it. Pignot brushed off the remaining ruined fragments of his shield and freed his arm. He held his sword with two hands and moved in on the fallen man. Darcebo saw him but made no move to defend himself. The crowds begged the gladiator to get back up. Pignot raised his sword. Someone cried out something about doing the honorable thing, to give the fallen man a chance to get up. The Sunjan almost barked a laugh. Just as the topper had done for him. Darcebo seemed to realize the danger just as Pignot's sword came down. He threw up his mace in an attempt to parry, but misjudged badly as the edged steel lopped off two of his fingers. The digits disappeared in the sand, and Darcebo took the moment to simply study his gurgling stumps as the weight of the weapon slowly wrenched itself free of his ruined grip. Pignot thought his foe was trying to say something.
"Mercy,"
Darcebo finally garbled out, but got stabbed through the shoulder instead. Pignot fell on the wounded man, laying him flat with one well-placed knee. He placed another on Darcebo's chest and poised the tip of his sword at the warrior's throat. Pignot might have felt merciful any other day of the week, but it was Darcebo's misfortune to catch him in foul spirits. The Sunjan punched his sword through the white throat of his foe. Darcebo's legs didn't even kick as his life was taken. Pignot twisted the steel, managing to hear the gristle crinkle over the roar of the people, and left the weapon in the dead man's neck. It was, perhaps, the only thing he'd done correctly all morning. Sweating, choking on dust, and suddenly feeling miserable, Pignot distanced himself from the body, crawling away on hands and knees. Insults fell about him, every bit as stinging as edged steel. He stood up, swayed on his feet, and walked as slowly as he could to the entryway. As he neared it, the portcullis creaked upwards, and somewhere behind him, Pignot heard the orator declare him the winner. The people lavished him with more verbal barbs, making him want to find a very deep hole and drown himself with drink. Once inside the tunnel, Pignot ripped the helm from his head and threw it at a wall. It rebounded off the stone with a clatter and a spark, earning the attention of the old gatekeeper below. Pignot leaned against the tunnel for moments, while outside, the crowd still taunted and voiced their disapproval of the finished fight.
"What?" he barked at the still staring gatekeeper. "Get down from there before I call the guards."
His face flushed. Pignot shook his head in derision and straightened. He walked down the stairs, not once meeting the weathered look of the gatekeeper.
"You fought like shite out there,"
the old man grumped.
"I won, didn't I?"
To that, the gatekeeper had no reply. Pignot walked past the impassive visors of the scars lining the white tunnel. The crowd became less bothersome the farther he walked. Even half drunk and sick to his stomach,
He'd still managed to win his fight and kill a topper. He realized he'd forgotten to place a wager on himself, but that was fine. A small purse of gold was coming to him, and he was still alive to enjoy it. That thought made him smile. In the end, that was all that mattered. All around him, the crowds continued talking about Pignot's fight. They flung insults at the gladiatorial chamber for allowing such men to participate in the games, and for once, Gaul had to agree. What he had seen on the sands was a disgrace to the sport and the spirit of the event. Even though he'd won his wager, having placed gold on Pignot, he was far from pleased with the Sunjan's sloppy victory. The only reason Pignot was alive, Gaul realized, was because the other idiot had been even more inebriated, and even then, the dog had still managed to put up a fight, unlike Pignot, who merely took advantage of an exhausted opponent, killing the man. The weapon masters of Cree would not approve. Glowering in dark thoughts, Gaul sat in the stands and mulled amongst the still livid crowd. When they settled down, he intended to make his way to the Domus and collect his winnings. He'd wait until the people watched the next match, not wanting anyone to know he'd wagered coin on the sick dog known as Pignot. The embarrassment would be too great. Chapter 4 They called him Crowhead, although his real name was Broz. He preferred his earned name, mostly because it was intimidating. There was a simple delight in disturbing people, Crowhead found, and he discovered that people were much more honest with him because he was frightening. It would probably damn him to Saemon's hell, of that he had little doubt, but he still enjoyed scaring people. He relished staring fighters in their eyes and projecting that fear, and the fear was justified. He was tall, perhaps the tallest he had ever encountered in his own travels. A great, long moustache flowed down the edges of his mouth as black as pitch. The ends were actually longer than his beard, which was short and non-existent compared to his forked whiskers. His complexion was dark and moody. He wore his hair short but not spiky, just enough to keep it out of his eyes, which were just as black as his beard and gleamed with malevolence. But the thing that got most people's attention, the thing that started people whispering as he walked through a crowd, was the chilling necklace of severed crow heads hanging from his neck. There were 5 dried heads, their black beaks as sharp as claws, dangling from his necklace and separated by knots. All were threaded through the eyes, as if the last thing they had felt was the knife tip. In the depths of Sunja's pit, amongst the rest of the free trained, he stayed in one corner and removed the nearby torches, claiming the ensuing void as his own. He'd been one of the first to enter the general quarters at the beginning, and he'd gotten no argument from any of the others when he settled on the corner. Outside the arena, he usually wore an open leather vest, which showed off his washboard stomach and muscular chest. His physique was chiseled but not heavy, with lanky limbs. When he was in general quarters, inside the dark, he claimed as his own, he sat with his back against a wall and watched whoever was closest. He studied how the men interacted with each other and made note of the friends, the fake friends, and the potential enemies. The fake friends, the ones who stood and joked and listened to their companions, but smirked when backs were turned, were snakes, in Broz's opinion. They couldn't be trusted. The men who outright hissed at one another, well, he didn't mind them. At least one knew where one stood with them. There were very few real friends in the pit, which didn't really surprise him. The air was hot and unpleasant with so many men in the bowels of the arena, but Broz didn't mind. He gathered his weapons and armor in the dark and prepared for his fight. A part of him figured he'd have to kill a man this day. He didn't want to, as killing a man in the arena invited retribution from other quarters, friends, or worse, even more proficient gladiators if the victim was part of a house or school. But if he had to kill, he'd do it, with no hesitation. When he emerged from the corner, conversations dribbled into silence. Men stepped out of the way of the tall man with a thick short sword and hand axe, and the necklace of screaming crows about his neck. Droves parted for the warrior, heading to the Media as if he were a hellion about to snatch one of them up. And so they should. Broz, Crowhead, was terrifying. In places, the corners of the white tunnel were draped in cobwebs, which made Cade reflect on pit fighting. It was all one big web, sticky strands crossing over each other, spiraling downwards towards a center that would ultimately eat you alive. He wasn't about to be devoured by the rabble around him. Though he was free-trained, he considered himself better than most, and certainly better than the two drunkards staggering about on the sands in the first match of the day. No wonder people had such low opinions of the free-trained. Cade didn't blame them for their curses and howls when they were offered such utter shite. Unprofessional louts. Thinking back on the fight filled him with contempt for the pair of so-called warriors. The dead one was lucky in his mind, and the victor would be ridiculed long before he set foot on the sand again. Cade had worked with his weapons long and hard enough to think he could fight for a house, but they only selected the cream. This day, he intended to put forth the best show he could manage, even if he had to crush a few heads in the process. He had fought in the pit last year, for the 2 months the fighting season had gone then, and he had won 3 or 4 matches before a brute from Oscar broke his right arm with a mace. Even now, Cade's forearm ached during the winter as if remembering the blow. It wasn't as though he needed the money. He got paid for his work and service to the crown, and the men he killed upon their command. He did this simply for the fun. Cade was an executioner, and a fine one at that. With his axe in hand, he could take the head off a man with one fell chop, 40 in a line if need be, before he had to stop for rest. He'd seen plenty of fear and death in his time. Signing up for the fights in Sunja's pit was almost like another day of work. It didn't bother him, as it did a few of the newer self-declared gladiators. Cade had to roll his eyes at some of the noisy bastards. He was thankful he had a hovel in the city to return to, for if he had to stay just one night in general quarters, listening to those braying animals, he'd start swinging steel before the sun rose. He knew he would. Thinking these thoughts, he made his way past the scars standing at attention and to the gatekeeper at the end. A sword was in his hand, and a large square shield hung off his arm. He would have preferred to take a battle axe to the men on the sand these days, but an axe wasn't the best of weapons for such reaving. Not like a good broadsword. And with an executioner's attention to edges, Cade had sharpened his blade by himself. He was a big, burly man, well protected under a suit of mail that gleamed. Heavy, for most, but Cade didn't notice it. He wasn't as fast as some, but he was strong in both endurance and limbs. As a greeting to the gatekeeper, he tapped the flat of his sword against the visor he wore. The grill poked with holes that gave the iron helm a grin. Already, the people were warming up to the next fight. "They're looking for blood after the last one," the gatekeeper informed him. Cade recognized the man from last season. He was one of a pair the chamber seemed to keep on. Old, with no chin to speak of, and a flab of flesh that jiggled like something hooked and freshly landed from a river, the gatekeeper regarded Cade with a pair of eyes that could have been mistaken for a dungeon rat's. "They're always looking for blood," Cade rumbled. "Their nature. Suppose it is. Fight hard, then." "I will," Cade promised, and meant it, studying the steps leading up to daylight and barred by thick portcullis. He intended to take the arms and legs off whoever was waiting for him on the sands. The gatekeeper nodded and pulled the lever. The orator's real name was Qualtus, and he was thankful this afternoon that the king wasn't about to see the pile of cowshite that he would forever curse himself for calling the first fight of the day. Still, he glanced to the raised viewing box situated high on the south wall just to make certain it was still empty. "Sweet Seddon above," he thought darkly, squinting from the sun's glare on the arena sands, and feeling the dainty beads of sweat making their way down his back towards the crack of his ass. If there ever was an argument to stop the free train from entering the pit, those last two toppers were it. He looked towards the north end of the arena, directly across from the king's viewing box, to the stand where nobles and the owners of some of the top-ranked houses sat and watched the games. That particular construction towered above the sands, with a high wall dividing the two groups. Rumour had it the wall split the viewing box, so the nobility wouldn't have to look upon the sometimes changing owners sitting in the section. Six men sat on that side this day, and Qualtus wondered what they had thought of the first show. Nexus, Kurge, and golden-faced Gastillo occupied the other side, and he could almost hear the swearing, from the wine merchant in particular. Kurge probably didn't care for him in the least. Gastillo, however, was hard to read due to the mask he wore. Who really knew what that one thought? As for the chamber members on the other side of the wall, Qualtus hoped they hadn't eaten heavily beforehand. Qualtus consulted the scroll that outlined the day's fights, given to him by a messenger sent from the media, who organized and oversaw everything. The orator didn't envy that position in the least. A person would have to think about what he was doing, and Qualtus knew very well he wasn't cut out for such tasks. He was merely the voice of the pit. He was the thunder above the sand. And right now, he had to sway the audience back to more favorable grounds and wash away the memory of the first fight. Qualtus had learned long ago it was best not to even acknowledge such a piss-poor showing. It was better simply to move on. Clearing his throat, he lifted his arms, the white sleeves of his orator's gown slipping to reveal his skinny limbs. The people, several thousand this day, but nowhere near the pit's capacity, took longer than usual to quiet.
"Men and women of the pit!"
The orator elected to go with the traditional introduction in an attempt to reset the entire day.
"You are honored guests to these blood games, games which have been a granite mast of our civilization for hundreds of years. Listen for a moment. Can you hear it as I do? The hushed cries of champions dead and gone, yet whose specters gather still to witness these new games, time after time. When the season grows cold, dead, then awakens and becomes hot, those warriors are here. Now, where once they stood, we stand. Where once they fought, men fight. And where once they died..."
Qualtus let that hang in the air for a moment.
"We watch, and we applaud skills of arms, and the rousing beat of death, for in these games, fought by men risking all for your entertainment and their own desire to be the best in Sunjar's pit, the only things that are certain are life, combat, and sands red with blood. On behalf of the gladiatorial chamber, dear guests, I present to you, for our mutual entertainment, a battle fought by two men who will stir the very sands and lift the earthly grains into the air, a fight that will make Saemon's hellions rise up to bear witness, and a fight that will have Sedan's heralds descend from the heavens and bless the best. I present to you a war that will have you talking well into the evening."
Qualtus paused, allowing his words time to be absorbed. If that didn't get their juices going, he didn't know what might. Then he chopped a hand towards the taller of the two pit warriors.
"From Sarland, he is the call ripped from death's face, a walking plague in man's form that kills all conversation in a busy street. He is a hunter, a collector, and he sets to make his mark known in Sunjar's pit for the first time this season. He is Crowhead."
The man draped in leather armor, with the exception of his helmet and face cage, stood still upon the arena sands, showing no indication of having heard anything from the orator. At the ends of seemingly lifeless arms hung a short sword and hand axe. The crowds did not quite know what to make of such a tall wraith, partially hunched at the shoulders, as if the very heat of the sun sought to melt him. Some of the people cheered, but it was a small few of the thousands watching. The orator liked that. He quickly switched to the other and started once more in a voice that commanded attention.
"Facing this hell pup is one of our own, a son of Sun-Jan and a wall of a man. Prisoners fear this brute like no other, and if your name is on his breath, you are certain his axe will find your neck. Born on the plains of Sanja and bronzed in the heat of her sun, he was a beast as a lad, and this day he carries with him the experience of one already well wise to the ways of the pit. You asked for a champion for these games. I give you Cade, the executioner."
Upon hearing the name of Cade, the arena exploded in thunderous applause. The mass of onlookers pulsated in the stands like fat veins about to gush. Cade stood motionless, a beech rock of armor, quietly appraising his opponent. Qualtus dropped his hands to his sides. As far as he was concerned, he had done his job, and as always, done it well. Now it was time for the chop.
"Let this contest begin!"
The howls and cheers of thousands drowned out the orator's final word. The two fighters raised their guards like wary veterans of the pit and circled each other while closing the distance between them. Crowhead let his arms dangle before him, his weapons swinging gently, as if caught in a breeze, while Cade lifted his shield and held it in front of his body like a heavy door. Cade eyed the shadowy shape of Crowhead as he approached, keeping his broadsword just above his right shoulder like a cocked catapult. The first chance that showed itself, he would swing that blade for all he was worth, and let the pit's servants clean up the mess. Crowhead got close enough for Cade to see the necklace of heads around his neck, and that set his head shaking in disbelief.
"You're a grim one, aren't you?" the executioner asked the man looming before him.
Crowhead said nothing in return. Not that Cade wanted him to say anything. In his line of work, more than half of the prisoners he killed begged him not to take their lives, as though it were up to him. No, he preferred it when they were quiet.
"Come on then, you black bastard,"
he whispered, and he got his request. Like a huge net flung into the sea, Crowhead lunged forward, swinging with both arms, his short sword and hand axe flashing in a flurry of strikes. He attacked the squat head of his foe, then his shoulders, and then suddenly dropped down to make a swipe at an extended leg. Planting his feet, Cade stopped all thrusts and chops with his shield, moving the iron and wood door on his arm where needed, placing his body behind it at all times. The crowd became quiet with each impact, until Crowhead suddenly broke off and took a few steps back. The speed of the other man's attack impressed Cade. The larger man was fast. He shifted to his left, keeping his shield in place and his sword ready, tightly wound like a loaded catapult, ready to snap. The orator was also taken aback by the initial flurry of strikes flying at the shorter Cade. He thought about the armor on Cade and wondered if perhaps it was a hindrance to him. Crowhead went at the heavily armored man again, cutting and slashing and stabbing at the end. Cade's shield absorbed every blow, and he counterstruck with his broadsword when Crowhead stopped. His hunk of edged metal scythed out and split the air once occupied by his adversary's skull. But the taller man ducked under the slash, surprising everyone. Crowhead jerked to Cade's left, prodding with his short sword and forcing the man to match him. Cade kept his shield before him and his sword set once more just above his shoulder, waiting for the opportunity to separate head from torso. Metallic whacks punctuated the air, as Crowhead didn't stop circling or swinging as he went, turning both men around in a complete circle and a half, before breaking off to catch his breath. Cade countered with a straight arm over the shield chop, missing his foe's helm and shoulder by the barest hair. Crowhead moved away then, placing a few strides between them while defensively weaving his long arms. Cade did not pursue. Qualtus believed the executioner was either tired or conserving his strength. The crowds were cheering the Sun-Jan, which was to be expected.
The darker fellow had the feel of evil about him, and these games sometimes depended on a hero and a villain. Crowhead rushed in and again whipped his blades at the steely form of the executioner. Sounds of each connection with the shield rang out, and the crowd collectively gasped at the onslaught. Crowhead's weapons chewed at the iron-bound shield. Sparks flared. Cade backed up, relenting against the intensity of the attack. Sword and hand axe chopped and slashed, and with every new swipe, the onlookers expected blood to fly. Then Crowhead broke away to catch his breath once more, and Cade jumped at him, unleashing his sword arm in a vicious counterstrike and connecting with his opponent's head with a loud crang that brought several cheering spectators to their feet. Crowhead moved backwards, placing room between him and his adversary, his axe hand going to his helmet. He ripped it from his head, and the crowd roared. Cade allowed him that, once again readying himself for a flurry of blows, wearing the Saarlander out and waiting for that one moment to strike, the one cut that would drop a very dark head rolling into the sands. Crowhead shook himself, and blood from a scalp cut dappled the ground. Hunched over and wary of the other man, he tossed the helmet away and pressed a forearm against his wound. It came away red. Taking fresh grips on his weapons, Crowhead slowly moved towards the wall that was Cade. The executioner watched him come forwards and smiled behind his visor. He knew what was about to come, and he knew, with no helmet to protect his foe, now was the time to go headhunting. His grin growing just a little more confident, Cade readied himself for the storm, and saw himself taking Crowhead's grim skull with one almighty chop. True to form, Crowhead charged in. Cade tensed, and the violent clash of metal on metal filled the air, until the pit's audience roared approval, drowning out the noise, until they collectively gasped. Crowhead charged in and swung, almost wild with his strikes this time. His sword struck Cade's shield while his hand axe sought his foe's sword arm and helmet. Cade turtled up, moving the barrier almost impossibly fast, stopping Crowhead's attacks even as his long arms looped around the shield. Cade stood firm and absorbed it all, parried everything, waiting for that break in the squall of edged steel he knew would come. And when it finally did, Crowhead stepped away, his weapons slipping down. Cade lashed out with his sword, stabbing for his foe's black eyes. Crowhead ducked under the arm, stepped in as if he knew the attack was coming, and uppercut with his sword. The blade sank halfway into Cade's chest, piercing metal links and flesh alike. Blood burst from the wound. Cade's eyes went wide with pain a split second before Crowhead's hand axe cleaved the side of his neck, splitting armor and flesh and driving the larger man to one knee. Crowhead left his sword in his prey, but he placed a hand on the fallen warrior's shoulder and wrenched his axe free in a torrent of red. Cade's sword dropped from his fingers. In the abrupt silence, there were only a few who didn't hear the executioner's haunting moan. Crowhead hacked at the neckline three times, driving the edge of his hand axe deeper into his dying opponent and opening him up enough to allow the blood to truly spray. It splashed up against his leather armor like a newfound spring. Crowhead pushed the dead man forward. Cade landed face down in the sand. Crowhead studied the corpse at his feet for a moment before stooping and retrieving his sword. He flicked both of his weapons, sending black beads of blood into the air. He found his helmet and picked that up as well, before turning and focusing on the orator. Qualtus remembered he had a voice.
"Ya Victor Crowhead!"
Some of the audience cheered. Some of them cursed. The majority sat, puzzled over how the match had gone and how it should have been. Crowhead didn't appear to care. With his weapons in hand, he turned and headed back to the portcullis creaking open, retreating to the more comfortable shadows. The orator watched him and nodded in approval. He appreciated a good surprise.
Chapter 5 The sun beat down with a heat that sought to sizzle sweat on bare skin. Harm sat outside the alehouse he'd woken up in, feeling as if his innards had been roped and tethered to the flanks of a horse that was then slapped on the rump and made to run. He sat with his back against the foundation, a few strides away from the open entryway so not to offend the owner. A river of people with two distinct currents ran by him, but he paid them no heed. With his face lifted to the sun, as if that glowing ball of heat could somehow purify him, Harm tried not to move at all, and kept one arm around an alehouse pitcher filled with water from a nearby well. His Medemian sword lay on his other side, in the ill-fitting scabbard.
"Ugh,"
he muttered. The dark of his closed eyes was orange-black from the sun. He knew he should find some shade and rest, but his legs didn't want to support him just yet. On the other hand, just sitting there and stewing in his own sweat didn't appeal to him either. The decision to refill the pitcher came to him, and then the notion to perhaps find and sit in some shade in the city center where high trees would allow to flourish. That seemed like a promising idea.
"You look like shite,"
someone said. Harm opened his eyes to see the shady figure of Gold supported by a pair of crutches. He raised a hand to shield his eyes, peering at the Cree with his mouth half open in an ugly grimace.
"Good thing you're you. I might have said something,"
Harm croaked.
"Like what?"
"Dunno. Something. What do you want?"
Gol smiled and stood with the crutches jammed into his armpits. He squinted at the sun.
"You, actually."
Harm studied the man. He wore a short skirt that stopped mid-thigh, befitting the style of the season. A white tunic, loose, covered his body, but bandages were visible along the shoulder where the cloth stopped.
"Where's the others?"
Harm asked.
"Who?" "Pignot."
"Why?"
"He fought earlier this day. Won his match in perhaps the worst way possible."
"He got cut up?"
Gol paused and thought about it.
"I don't think so."
"Then any win is a good one?"
Standing there, balanced on his crutches, Gol seemed to think even more. Harm found that refreshing.
"How the hell do you know that man? Is he a friend?"
the Cree finally asked. Harm considered it.
"Pignot a friend?"
"Well, yes. He is. Sort of. He's pretty much the only one who's been around as long as I have in these games, although I have a couple of years on him."
"I see."
Gol threw his head back and inhaled sharply through his nose.
"You didn't accompany him to his fight this morning."
"Pignot needs no nursemaid, and I was still unconscious. I don't even know where Mullock is off to."
Someone jostled Gol from behind, and he had to stamp his left foot into the ground to stop himself falling over. The offender disappeared into the crowd, but Harm saw how Gol's arms had been cut up and bandaged by the butcher of Balgothar. He remembered the Cree saying that his right shoulder might have been broken as well, so just using the crutches would probably be an agonizing challenge. The old champion had danced a jig on his flesh before Gol had killed him.
"You want something to drink?"
Harm asked him.
"Me? Now?"
Gol frowned and shook his head.
"Too much drinking going on around here.
No, thank you."
"More for me, then,"
Harm thought.
"You and I have to talk."
Gol stared straight into his eyes.
"We have some work before us. Or at least I have work to do. You have a decision to make."
Harm squinted in the sun's glare.
"Sounds serious."
"I'm going to meet with the gladiatorial chamber this day. I'm going there now, in fact."
"What? Why?"
"To see what must be done to set up my own house."
Harm felt his mouth go dry, and he wasn't sure if it was from the drinking the night before or something else. He kept his eyes on the man before him as he lifted his nearby pitcher and took a drink from it. When the water was gone, Harm got to his feet, his great belly quivering, and tucked the pitcher under one arm. He didn't bother to brush the dust from his black breeches or bandages.
"You really want to do this?"
he asked.
"I do."
Harm shrugged.
"Let's go then.
At the very least, I'll be interested to see where it all leads."
"Which way?"
"It's next to the pit, isn't it?"
It is. Part of the pitch, really. This way, but walk slowly. I can barely stay on these things. He indicated the crutches, as it is with my arms and shoulder. The healer said I only need to keep off my toes for a few weeks, and I don't think my shoulder's broken like before. I can still move it. Hard to take a piss, Harm joked gruffly. Gaul regarded him with a mildly distasteful look. Only asking, the Jiberian muttered. The Cree wasn't Pignot, that was for certain. He placed a hand to his own covered wounds, the bandages stained with dust and dirt. You think the chamber will see us? They will. Harm looked at his companion and saw the determination on his battered face. They must, the Cree said simply. The Jiberian grunted and idly adjusted the sword at his waist. They walked through the crowds, keeping to one side and away from most of the traffic in the middle. The smell of the city could always be improved upon, as every so often even Harm wrinkled up his nose at an old man who smelled as if he hadn't washed in months. Also, the merchants were guiding strings of horses, goats, or cows, not in the least concerned with the heaps of dung, collectively and colloquially known as cow-kisses, their animals left behind. The Jiberian had no trouble passing through the mob, big and ugly as he knew himself to be. All he had to do was keep a hard face about him, and the masses parted like wheat. It was even easier this day than most, since he looked as though he'd been in a fight. Gaul fell in step behind him, moving along as best as he could on his crutches. Bare clotheslines spanned the main street, but down the smaller alleyways, more lines hung and drooped with washed clothes, some colourful, some grey in the shade. As they walked, Harm noticed a leather worker and stopped in his tracks.
What is it?
Gaul asked from behind.
I need a new scabbard, Harm told him. Wait here, would you?
Don't be too long.
Harm didn't respond to that, letting his silence do the talking. He would take as long as he needed to get what he wanted done. The leather maker, a middle-aged man with a chin full of rusty stubble, sat in the middle of a wooden stall that ran far back and ended in a wall of curtains. On tables, fine leather scabbards for all manner of blades were on display, and the merchant paused for a moment, looking up from his stitching as Harm closed with one table.
Ho! Oh, leather worker!
Harm's voice carried over the bustle of the people.
Can you make me a sheath for this?
With that, he removed the scabbard from his waist and handed it over. The merchant took it from him and turned it about, extracting the sword and nodding favourably.
Madimian, very nice.
I can put something together, but it will cost you. Too bad I can't adjust one of the scabbards already made. When can you have it done? Come back tomorrow. I'm not that busy. What's your name?
Harm of Jiberia, and best be careful with that piece. It has memories attached to it.
Sentimental, are you?
The man smirked. Harm scowled.
What did you call me?
The leather maker cleared his throat.
Nothing. I've no worries. It'll be here when you come back tomorrow. You can pay me then.
Mulling over whether or not he'd just been insulted, and whether he should slap the punts in front of him, Harm eventually turned and left. He rejoined awaiting Gaul.
Buying a scabbard? Gaul asked him.
I am. When one has coin, it's best to spend it.
Gaul didn't say anything to that, and Harm wondered if he had misjudged the man somehow. The Cree was becoming increasingly more serious as the day went on. Harm really didn't know anything about him other than he was from Cree, and he had killed Baylus, who had spared Gaul in their fight only to lose his life to him.
Let's be off then.
Gaul swung away on his crutches, pushing back into the crowds and leaving Harm to catch up. The Jiberian soon stepped around the Cree and resumed his place as a divider of people.
You're a serious one, aren't you?
Harm asked, splitting his attention between the masses and Gaul.
What?
I said, you're a serious one, aren't you?
You're not.
Seddon? No.
Harm chuckled.
Not since birth. Too much going on around me to be that way. I tried to just live and make my way through it all.
I see,
Gaul said pointedly. And how has that worked out for you?
Not bad thus far.
This is not bad.
Yes.
But Harm wasn't so sure anymore. When I look at you, do you know what I see? Harm wasn't certain he wanted to hear this. It sounded far too serious, and him still partially hungover. It was a wonder his headache was gone, but his innards still ached.
What?
He finally asked, deciding it would be good for a chuckle.
I see a man with little push and motivation, but fat with potential. A man with little, if that, to his name, who deals in life or death games for the amusement of the people while there is a war on, and ignoring the gathering dangers beyond Sunja's walls. Living in ignorance as you are, I see you dead, perhaps by year's end, if not sooner.
Harm slowed in his tracks at the mention of Sunja's walls, and turned around to appraise the man as he prattled on. And Gold did.
I see a man who would jump at the chance to better himself if the opportunity arises, for he's smart enough to know this life will be the death of him, but by setting above, he has no idea of how to better his lot, so he placates himself by getting drunk when he has the coin, comforts himself with hired wenches if need be, tells himself life isn't something to be taken seriously, while searching for that very thing that will save him, though he doesn't know what it is, and who jokes about his life as if it's no more than cow kisses dotting the road.
Gol stopped then, locking eyes with the bigger Jiberian and not backing down in the least.
That's what I see.
Harm stared into the depths of the Cree's brown eyes and saw, even felt, a man who would start swinging the very crutches he walked with if Harm took a swing at him, and he believed that Gol expected him to swing at him. He had the sense to see that, but why would the Cree say such a thing to him?
Why are you saying this to me?
Harm finally asked without a shred of humour in his voice.
I've done nothing to you. Sometimes the hardest hits come with words,
Gol said, barely heard over the din of the crowds milling around them,
and they also do the most good.
With that, Gol moved back a step and went around Harm, leaving him to stare after the smaller man. He thought for a moment, weighing the Cree's stinging words. Not too many men had the balls to say such a thing to his face, and in the middle of the street,